Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're cutting through the noise, really focusing on actionable insights from, well, one of the world's most dynamic growth areas, the Southeast Asia digital economy.
That's right. We're zeroing in specifically on the markets of the Seon region. And our goal today, our mission, is to synthesize the hard data we've got from the Google, Temasek, and Bain Economy SEA research.
Yeah, and highlight exactly where those key investment opportunities are sitting, particularly in two huge sectors, transport and food delivery.
Exactly. We're really tracking the shift, you know, away from that old growth at all costs mantra towards a sustainable, profitable scale.
And scale is definitely the word. I mean, this digital economy, it's just exploding. It's on track to blow past $300 billion in gross merchandise value. That's GMV in 2025.
Which is stunning when you think about it. That's 1.5 times the original 10-year forecast they had. Just incredible growth.
So what's really driving this? Is it just more people coming online?
Well, that's part of it, but it's not the whole story anymore. GMV and revenue, they're both seeing steady year-over-year increases, roughly 15%.
Okay.
But the acceleration now, it's fueled by deeper digital participation, sure. But more importantly, it's about these smarter monetization strategies the big players are rolling out.
Ah, so they're finally figuring out how to turn all those users into actual sustainable revenue.
Precisely. That's the key shift we're seeing.
Okay, let's unpack that. Starting with food delivery. For years, this sector felt like the poster child for subsidized growth, basically just burning cash for market share.
It really was.
But the sources are suggesting it's hitting like a crucial inflection point, a pivot towards profit.
It absolutely is maturing.
Yeah.
If you look across the Seon markets for 2025, food delivery is projected to hit $23 billion in GMV. Still growing solid, 14% year over year.
Okay, 14%, pretty good.
But here's the crucial part. Revenue is actually pacing even faster. It's forecast at $2.4 billion, which is an 18% jump year over year.
Right, so that gap, that faster revenue growth, that's the signal.
That's the signal. It points directly to this central investment thesis we're seeing. Food delivery is genuinely on the cusp of profitability.
So how are they pulling this off? Because delivery logistics, I mean, that's notoriously expensive, right?
They're getting extremely disciplined, ruthlessly focused on cost, really, finding every single way they can to cut the cost of delivering that meal.
Like what specifically?
Optimized logistics is a big one. Less dead time for drivers, much more efficient riding, especially in those really dense metro areas where the volume is.
Makes sense.
And they're also laser focused on increasing the average order value, the AOV, using smart cross-selling, pushing group orders, anything to get more value out of each delivery trip.
Okay, that covers the core business.
Mm-hmm.
But the research also highlights this big push into adjacent revenue opportunities. It feels like they're looking beyond just the delivery fee itself.
They absolutely are.
But isn't there a risk there? If they're relying so much on this ancillary income, maybe it's just masking still thin margins in the core delivery game.
That's the critical question, isn't it? But the data, it suggests these adjacent streams aren't just masks. They seem to be the actual foundation for higher margin, sustainable growth going forward.
How so?
Because the platforms are tapping into revenue streams that completely sidestep those really high 20 to 25% commissions they typically charge for the core delivery service itself.
Okay, so where's the most significant adjacent money flowing from that?
Two main levers stand out. First, advertising. It's huge. These platforms have become essential ad channels, especially for smaller, you know, long tail vendors.
The local restaurants and shops.
Exactly. And those vendors are increasingly adopting the sophisticated ad solutions the platforms offer. So we're seeing high double digit growth in ad revenue because, frankly, the platforms are getting really good at customer targeting.
Okay. Advertising makes sense. What's the second lever?
This one's maybe a bit more surprising, especially for a delivery company. The dine-in expansion.
Right. I saw that. Why is capturing value inside the restaurant so important for a platform that was built on moving food outside the restaurant? Seems counterintuitive.
It's strategic because it offers a high margin alternative. Think about it. By using their discovery services, selling high value dine-in vouchers.
Like discounts for eating at the actual restaurant.
Precisely. The platforms capture value from the entire restaurant experience, not just the delivery part. It lets them monetize the full customer lifetime value. And crucially, the margin on selling a voucher is significantly higher than the margin they make on a delivery order after you factor in all the driver costs.
Got it. So for you, the listener, the key insight here isn't just the GMV growth rate anymore. It's this shift. this pivot from valuing subsidized users to valuing these high-margin adjacent revenue streams.
Yeah, and that really changes the game. It makes the whole food sector a much more, let's say, appealing profile for investors who are looking for stability and, well, actual sustainability, not just endless growth.
Okay, solid points on food. Let's switch gears now to transport. This sector also seems to be demonstrating current profitability, but maybe with an eye towards some massive future disruption.
Yeah, the transport sector, it remains incredibly robust across, for 2025, we're projecting $11.5 billion in GMV and about $1.9 billion in revenue.
And the growth there?
Still strong double digits. Both are growing rapidly, around 16 to 17% year over year. So very healthy.
And are they using similar strategies to the food platforms to kind of boost profitability right now? Things like, you know, subscription bundles, tiered services.
Precisely the same playbook in many ways. Current profit strategies definitely include offering tiered services, appealing to both mass market users and the high value segment. They're using subscription bundles to lock in frequency, make usage a habit.
Okay.
And they're incorporating in-app ads, just like food, for that extra revenue stream. And crucially, they've also significantly reduced those heavy consumer incentives they used to rely on so much.
That reduction in incentives, that basically means users are paying more, doesn't it? Are we seeing any pushback there? Is the market really mature enough now to absorb those costs without people just using the services less?
It seems the market is maturing, yes. Users are clearly prioritizing convenience, speed, reliability, things the platforms have now largely established.
Trust is there.
The trust is there. So while they've cut back on those sort of blanket subsidies, they're getting smarter, using data to offer more targeted rewards and promotions. And this disciplined approach, it directly boosts the bottom line. It reinforces that the current profitability isn't just smoke and mirrors. It's based on genuine operational efficiency, not just burning cash for volume.
Okay, so efficiency today is key. But while these tiered offerings and ad revenues are helping now, the real seismic shift everyone's talking about isn't pricing. It's what actually drives the vehicle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the electric vehicle and autonomous vehicle momentum.
That is absolutely the big disruptive angle. EV adoption, especially for two-wheelers, is accelerating incredibly fast, and it's often fueled by public policy.
Like where?
Well, look at Vietnam. They've got subsidies aiming to convert 20,000 two-wheelers to electric. And get this, Hanoi's central business district is actually moving to ban fossil fuel models entirely by July 2026.
Wow, then soon.
It is. And Indonesia is also pushing hard with incentives for e-two-wheelers and promoting local production. So this EV transition, it's not some distant future thing. It's happening right now.
Okay, so EVs are rolling out.
Uh-huh.
But then there's the even bigger disruption, AVs, autonomous vehicles. This promises to just fundamentally rewrite the unit economics of mobility, potentially in the next few years.
Absolutely. We're seeing ongoing AV pilots now in six different sea countries. That signals a massive opportunity brewing, and the economic shift could be stunning.
How stunning?
The research suggests that robotaxis, they have the potential to actually outperform human drivers on cost within just 3 to 5 years.
3 to 5 years?
How right.
How?
Yeah. It's driven by lower manufacturing costs for these specialized vehicles, plus advanced level 4 capabilities. Level 4 basically means the vehicle handles all the driving autonomously under specific conditions,
right,
which allows for things like remote fleet oversight and just maximizing how much each vehicle is actually utilized, running almost 24/7.
Okay, that sounds incredible for efficiency. But let's pause there, because that means, well, it means taking human drivers out of the equation, doesn't it?
Yeah.
In a region where these platforms support millions of livelihoods, that smells like massive regulatory risk.
It absolutely does.
What are the big hurdles investors really need to keep an eye on here?
It raises really serious questions. Social stability, regulatory caution, they're huge factors. First off, the technological maturity, frankly, is still relatively low. These pilots haven't really been validated in genuinely uncontrolled, chaotic traffic.
Which is critical for Southeast Asia, right?
Yeah.
Stopping at a red light can sometimes feel like a gentle suggestion, not a hard rule. That's a brutal test case for any level 4 AI.
Exactly. It's a completely different operating environment than, say, suburban Phoenix. And related to that, regulatory readiness is, highly cautious.
Understandably.
Singapore is currently the only country in the region with dedicated AV regulations on the books. Most governments are trying to balance this push for tech advancement with very real, understandable concerns about job displacement. It's a tightrope walk.
So to navigate those chaotic streets and these regulatory tightropes, the AV tech companies probably can't just go it alone. They need local partners, right? People who already have trust in the market.
That's the critical insight, yeah. The source material really highlights that the established local mobility platforms, the ones with the existing apps, the routing data, the massive customer trust, they are the essential partners for the AV companies.
So the AV guys bring the driving tech.
Right. They bring the core driving stack, maybe flexible financing models, but the local platforms bring the market access, the customer relationship, the operational know-how on the ground. It's a classic symbiotic partnership. They need each other to overcome these local go-to-market challenges.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's broaden our view a bit now. Let's look at the overall investor climate in CN and how this huge wave of AI is influencing both food and transport. Is the funding environment even strong enough to sustain this kind of innovation pace?
Cautiously, yes. The signs are moderately positive. Private funding did see a modest 15% uptick over the last 12 months, hitting about $7.7 billion.
Okay, an uptick is good.
It is, but the money is being very selective. It's focusing overwhelmingly on late-stage deals, companies that are already showing traction and a path to profit.
And where is most of that money going? Still fintech?
Yep. Digital Financial Services, or DFS, still received the lion's share, somewhere between 45 and 50% of the total funding. But yeah. AI is clearly the big new focus area.
How much focus?
About 30% of all private funding in the last 12 months went towards AI-related startups. That's a significant chunk, signaling where investors see the immense future potential.
And what's fascinating, I think, is how AI isn't just future potential. It's actually transforming profitability right now in transport and food.
Mm-hmm.
Even before we see widespread consumer-facing AI applications.
Exactly. Right now, it's largely about efficiency gains in the middle and back office, stuff the consumer rarely sees directly.
Like what?
Things like advanced portfolio management for lending, hyper-efficient routing algorithms that save fuel and time, automating financial reporting, that kind of thing. Grab, for instance, one of the leading super apps, is projecting $1 billion in economic value just from its internal AI use cases in 2025 alone.
$1 billion. That is a massive quantifiable impact just from efficiency. What does that mean specifically for, say, an investor looking at these companies and maybe for the workforce too?
Well, for investors, it points towards significantly increased margins and better profitability potentially hitting the bottom line in the coming quarters. It makes the path to sustainable profit much clearer.
Right.
And for the workforce, AI is definitely transforming roles, not just eliminating them in some cases. Grab's AI driver companion tool, for example, is apparently already boosting daily earnings for about 250,000 drivers by 10 to 20% through better matching and routing.
So it's augmentation, not just replacement in some areas.
In many areas, yes. And the talent landscape itself is shifting rapidly. We're seeing 79% of workers across CN say they've learned to use AI tools. Enrollment in generative AI courses is booming, sometime like 5.2 times year-over-year growth. This is a region that's rapidly adapting its labor force.
Okay, so AI is driving efficiency now. But looking ahead, how is it going to redefine the actual customer journey on these platforms?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the future growth angle from AI?
AI is poised to completely redefine discovery. Think beyond simple keyword searches. Consumers are starting to use much more complex natural language queries.
Instead of just searching taxi, they might ask.
Exactly. They might ask, what's the best mode of transport for my 5-kilometer commute home, considering there are hills and it's 5 p.m. rush hour?
Right. Much more nuanced.
Much more nuanced. And 75% of consumers in the region are already saying that AI-powered tools, like chatbots or image search, have helped them discover new content, new services, new restaurants.
And the sort of ultimate goal here, reading between the lines of the research, seems to be this future powered by what they're calling agentic transactions. What exactly does that mean?
That's kind of the holy grail, the ultimate convergence. Think of agentic transactions as, well, your AI seamlessly ordering your lunch based on your preferences and schedule, or booking your ride home without you actively having to open an app and click a payment button.
Truly invisible commerce.
That's the idea. These AI agents could orchestrate payments and transactions across multiple different platforms, almost entirely without direct user intervention at the moment of transaction.
That sounds amazing, but technically very complex. What needs to be in place for that to happen?
It requires really robust, interoperable infrastructure. Specifically, the research points to things like the cross-border QR payment rails that are being built out across the region. Making payments invisible, instant, and seamless across different apps and borders is absolutely key to enabling that agentic future. So wrapping this up, if you're trying to chart the future of the sea on digital economy from an investment perspective, the two key takeaways from our deep dive today seem pretty clear.
Go on.
First, food delivery. It's really solidifying its business model now. It's moving past those heavy subsidies to build genuinely high margin revenue, primarily through those adjacent services like advertising and, surprisingly, dine-in offers.
Okay, food is maturing into profitability. Takeaway number two.
Transport. It's already demonstrating current profitability through smart tactics, but it's also right on the cusp of a potentially massive disruption driven by EV and AV technology. That promises stunning efficiency gains, maybe within that 3 to 5 year window we talked about.
But we have to connect this back to the bigger picture, right? The research really seems to suggest that while, yes, global economic uncertainties are a headwind, the actual future path of this, you know, $300 billion plus digital economy, it might ultimately be determined by what the report calls the wild card of regulatory choices.
And that raises our final provocative thought for you, the listener, to really consider. Regional regulators across CCN seem to be holding the keys to the future right now.
So the big question is,
will they choose policies that manage to successfully unlock the immense potential of AI and AV technologies, policies that allow for the kind of widespread adoption that promises to redefine efficiency and profit? Or will fragmented regulations, perhaps driven by those very real socioeconomic concerns about potential job displacement, end up inhibiting growth in these absolutely key sectors over the next decade? That's the tightrope.
That really is the fundamental question hanging over these markets. A lot to think about there. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the Southeast Asia digital economy. We really hope you feel more informed and maybe ready to act on some of these insights. Keep learning, keep questioning, and we'll catch you next time.